transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Joining us on the show this week is psychologist and professor Dr. Frank Farley, talking about the recent bombing events in Boston. Dr. Farley talks about how the victims and the city of Boston are feeling and how they can persevere and move forward. He also gives his opinion on who he thinks might have been responsible for the chaos. We then chat with John Gordon about top smartphone apps for Android and iPhone. Relationship coach Frank Kermit stops in to talk about handling how you feel about what other people think about your relationships. We then top things off with a killer remix from Rihanna, Stay.
Capture your need for sound.
It's been an awful situation to watch in Boston following the bombings at the Boston Marathon on April 15th. What was supposed to be a magical day for thousands of people from around the world turned into a day of chaos, confusion, and despair. To talk about the aftermath of these events and how to start the process of moving forward and getting on with our lives while not forgetting what happened is Dr. Frank Farley, former president of the American Psychological Association, a psychologist and professor at Temple University in Philadelphia. Dr. Farley, thank you so much for joining us again on The Kelly Alexander Show.
You're welcome, Kelly.
Dr. Farley, let's start by recognizing, obviously, that this was, you know, supposed to be a great day and so many people were in a festive and, you know, inspirational mood. What are the first emotions and reactions that the people directly involved would have felt and had to sort of deal with?
Well, probably there's the initial fear and anxiety. Is this all there is? Is there more? Is there going to be other things like this in this area? So that would be probably the initial one. Then, you know, the relief that you're alive, that you're getting out of there. And then the long-term things are probably, you know, flashbacks, remembering what it was like, you know, how close it came to injury or death. One of the shock aspects of this whole thing is it's so out of context, you know, with the Boston Marathon, which is the ultimate in sort of healthy, competitive, you know, sort of positive and exciting experience, and this just totally destroyed all of that. And so there is a enormous shock, and it really is bizarre contrast between what the FBI is basically implying as a terrorist act on the one hand, and then this fabulous 100-plus year event on the other hand. And for some people, that's the difference there is very hard to resolve.
After the initial shock, what happens to the victims and their families? I suppose that on some level it depends, you know, how badly they were injured or if they were directly injured or not. But, I guess there's a lot of emotions, like you sort of mentioned, that will wash over them in the next, you know, days and weeks.
Well, that's true. But, you know, people differ a lot. I mean, we differ in personality. We differ at so many levels. And so some people, you know, are going to place it in some kind of context like, well, you know, we didn't die, and or my spouse or child or sibling who was injured didn't die. And so you try to accentuate the positive. And then, you know, other people just you know, go into an emotional tailspin, and the deep grieving, the senselessness is often an issue, trying to make sense out of things. You know, one of the things about living is that we're all trying to make sense out of this life. And something like this is senseless, mindless, and pointless. And so it's very hard, you know, to lose a loved one, for those who did lose a loved one, to make any sense out of it. You know, some people, when that happens, they can grieve for years, and a part of that grieving can be trying to put it in perspective. How could this happen? You know, sometimes a religious person might have a lot of trouble with that because they might say, well, God, if God is a loving God, how could he let this happen? So the aftermath can be complex, and a lot of it depends on the individual. We're all familiar with people who, you know, can just take all sorts of trauma and just keep on ticking. Other ones, you know, it strikes them right in the heart, and they just have, you know, months or years of trouble dealing with it.
In the sort of, I guess, immediate aftermath, and then even as the months go on, how can family and friends help the victims heal? Or should they be making a concerted effort to see a specialist, like, you know, like a psychologist or a you know, someone in that field that can help them maybe through this, where it might be above and beyond what the family is able to accomplish?
If it is the latter, if it is above and beyond, if it is interfering with your life, interfering with your job if you're working, then you should seek help. A psychologist, a psychiatrist, a social worker. You need somebody who's objective and outside of your immediate world who can help you. If it's short of that, then family can be very important. Sharing is a very important thing. You know, we're a social animal, humans. And so therefore sharing your thoughts and your emotions with someone who you trust and love can be very, very helpful. But if that isn't working, then I would strongly urge professional help.
What about the city of Boston as a whole? Because on some level, they're experiencing their version of 9/11, which happened to New York.
True. It doesn't come close to the magnitude. It does have certain similar qualities, the unusualness of it. The Boston Marathon, for many people around the world, is probably the most famous thing associated with Boston. You know, it's a very famous event. So therefore, it has a lot of cachet and a lot of importance for people in Boston. And that's obviously, if this was a terrorist act, that's obviously why the terrorists struck at this particular thing. So it does have certain similarities to 9/11. The magnitude is less. 9/11 just had some absolutely stunning qualities. Flying an airplane into the tallest building in America, you know, is just beyond any comprehension. Whereas setting off, you know, an IED near a crowd of people in Boston isn't so unusual. But still, it happened in Boston, and it happened on Boston's watch. It happened in association with their most iconic event, basically. So it'll have a lot of impact. But you know, one of the things about the media these days and the people who consume media, which is all of us, is there's always another story coming along. There's always another issue. And so, you know, there will be other things come up, and it may also get to be sort of more technical as time goes on. You know, the FBI and other agencies begin to figure things out, and it becomes, you know, well, what was the technical aspects of these bombs, and how did these people, if they were foreigners, get into the country if they weren't foreigners? You know, who were they? How did they function? How do they pull this off? And it'll become more like a CSI, you know, a forensic lesson. And so that may reduce some of the trauma. You know, one of the things about 9/11 was the repeated image of the Twin Towers, the planes riding into the Twin Towers. That was simply stunning. The images here aren't so much like that. And therefore, I don't think they're going to have the continuing impact on people, the emotional impact on people. You know, we see this kind of thing, you know, in Syria, this sort of thing is happening all the time. and some other countries, Pakistan and so on. And we've seen some examples in other countries. So it's not so unusual, and I think, therefore, its emotional impact is going to diminish more quickly by far than 9/11.
Some media is, you know, comparing this to 9/11, because I've seen them, you know, trumpet out that picture that we were talking about with the plane crashing into the buildings, and then they cut back to, you know, this repeated, it almost has them on repeat, that scene of the bomb going off where you don't really see much more of that plume of smoke. And then I think that older gentleman falling over. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that in the last, while. But I guess comparing it to 9/11, like you said, it's a different magnitude. But for the people, Dr. Farley, that were directly, you know, impacted by it, the victims and their families, is this as traumatic as 9/11 would have been to someone that was involved in that?
It could be. You know, it's very hard to know. But, yeah, I mean, if your loved ones were involved here, were wounded or killed, then it's got every bit as much impact on you as if you were in New York in 9/11 and that happened to you, to your loved ones. So, yeah, I mean, it's all loss and grieving and all of the emotions associated with that. For the nation, it won't have the impact. There's just no way that this will have the same impact as 9/11. It'll have, it'll have some emotional impact nationwide, worldwide. But here's a grim fact. These kind of things are happening all over the world. And, backpacks with bombs in them or other related techniques are being used all over the world all the time. I mentioned Syria, but Pakistan and Iraq and, in London, England, and, you know, it's an MO that we're very, very, very familiar with. And it's just not comparable to 9/11. I mean, we've nothing in the world now or in history sort of matches the incredible qualities of that, of the 9/11. But for the people involved here, sure, it's going to be very traumatic.
Joining us on the show is Dr. Frank Farley, former president of the American Psychological Association, a psychologist and professor at Temple University in Philadelphia. Will the people who were not injured go through the why not me guilty phase? Because obviously there was some that were almost there, just went through. Like, are they going to go through trauma in their own regard?
Yes, some will. Some will, some won't. You know, the amazing story of the human race is individual differences. And we have so many different qualities from one person to the next, in personality and emotions and, you know, intelligence and all sorts of things. And so, therefore, some people are going to be highly resilient and they'll place it in a context that, you know, they lucked out and it didn't happen to them and they're very, you know, sad about the ones who are directly impacted, but they'll move on. Then other people will really be wrestling with it. Why wasn't it, how come it didn't happen to me? And holy cow, it was so close. And could this ever happen again? And so some people will indeed have trouble. And again, those are the ones who, if it really persists and interferes with their life, they really should consider getting help. There are lots of psychologists and psychiatrists and social workers out there who, are trained in this kind of traumatic results and can help them out.
What about the first responders? What do they need in the days and weeks to follow?
Well, it's hard to say. Some of them may need some help psychologically. I would guess that at a much lower rate than the marathoners who were directly involved, who may have been hurt or been standing next to somebody who was seriously hurt. You know, one of the things about these first responders is, in my view, who's attracted to that occupation? I think it tends to be people who are sort of risk takers, you know, who sort of, they're sort of heroic people in a sense. Their job is a form of heroism where there's a lot of risks. And they're sort of often putting their life on the line by virtue of their job. And so I think that what the people who are attracted to that tend to be more resilient and therefore better able to deal with it. I think that many of them who aren't that way, who aren't don't have that resilience and that ability to tolerate the risks involved, probably can't do well in that occupation and probably drop out in time. So I would say that they're probably going to, most of them will come out, you know, okay out of this.
Now, Dr. Farley, we've had you on the show many times before, and I know one of the topics we've had you on is to talk about serial killers and motives and all that sort of stuff as to why people behave the way they do. So I know I'm going to ask you, I guess, to speculate here for just a second, but if we move to the actual act itself, these bombs that have gone off in Boston and the purpose of them and all that sort of stuff, obviously it's so early in the investigation, we don't know very much, but do you think with what we do know so far, can you maybe speculate or give your opinion as to if you think this is actually a domestic terrorist attack, or do you think that it is, you know, from foreign countries?
Oh, boy, impossible to know. But just wildly speculating, I would guess that the perpetrator is a younger person, may well be fitting the you know, age 20 to 40 male profile. And beyond that, though, and I guess, again, I'm guessing a male or males, and that's a long shot, but that's my guess, and probably in the 20 to 40 range. Beyond that, it's hard to know how would somebody get into the country? Well, that's not a big problem, I guess. So it's knowing the marathon, there seems to be some evidence that the perpetrator knew the marathon quite well. So who would know that? I live in the States. I don't know anything about the marathon, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I were to never run it, I would have to do a lot of research to find out a lot about it, you know, the whole structure of it, the flow of people, where most of the people are at any given time in this thing, where the end of it is. Then I'd have to case that whole area and... I suppose one might say, well, someone domestically might fit in better and might know a lot more, you know, somebody who's actually living in Boston. But again, that's all wild, wild speculation. You know, I think we often tend to think, well, it's going to be a foreign person,
mm-hmm.
a terrorist recruited from, you know, through Al-Qaeda or something like that, although people are saying they don't think that it's Al-Qaeda, but some foreign national who's a terrorist and hates America, that's the usual. But Timothy McVeigh and other people, the Unabomber and so on, we've had a lot of domestic
mm-hmm.
Terrorists. So I don't think we can rule out a domestic terrorist. And my own sense is that whoever did it knew a lot. And, you know, I guess it's not that hard to deposit a backpack.
Right.
But there's a lot of eyeballs
mm-hmm.
at this thing. And a lot of people along the route, you know, who are crowd control, particularly toward the finish line, you have a lot of crowd control going on. And so it just struck me as relatively sophisticated, although three of them apparently didn't explode. But, you know, it's been argued that one was directed at getting people to run in a certain direction, which was smack dab into the other one. If that's true, that's fairly sophisticated, and it's done under the watchful eye of, you know, hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
So it, to me, it kind of bespeaks somebody who's pretty familiar with the Boston world and the marathon world. And that kind of points a finger for me towards some domestic terrorist.
Dr. Farley, thank you so much for your time. We always appreciate your knowledge and your sort of understanding of all of this sort of stuff.
Happy to do it.
Awesome. That was Dr. Frank Farley, former president of the American Psychological Association, a psychologist and professor at Temple University in Philadelphia.
Capture your need for sound.
We're very happy to welcome back to the show one of our very own team members from our social media department. It's John Gordon. John, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
So you're always bringing us cool and interesting things to talk about. And this week we're going to talk about some really cool apps for your smartphone that some people don't know about. And I think it's really good to do this because I, for example, was just shown one recently called Moves, which I know there's a bunch of them that are out there, but this basically tracks your walking or your running. And I've been having a great time with it. It's really been interesting for me to see how many steps I'm taking when I sort of, you know, go about my day. So I think that's really cool. So let's get going then. Which one do you want to start off with first?
Sure. Well, I just chose three different apps. And what's great about these three is that they are available for both the iPhone, iPad, and Android, which is usually the iPhone and the Android being the two most popular phones. So the first one I want to start with, it's in the news slash magazines category, and it's called Flipboard. Now, this is my personal favorite app just because it's basically you create your own personal magazine. So what that means is you get to choose a few topics such as technology, sports, business, or news, and then you can even actually choose specific sources from each of those categories that you want to follow, and then you put them all together, and it creates your own personal magazine. So you can just flip through. It's a very clean, simple interface that allows you to just keep up to date with what's going on in the news of whatever topic you like, and it's just it's an awesome app.
Is it free, John? I don't know if I caught that part. Is it free?
Yeah, it is free. I don't know if I mentioned that, but the three apps that I will be mentioning, including Flipboard, they are all free.
Okay. And you said this one is really clean, so it's very simple for you to make your choices, I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, like, for each page, you'll have maybe 8 spaces to fill your categories, and you just simply tap on the picture and it'll open up and you flip through. You literally with your finger, you just flip the pages, and it's like a real magazine where it flips, and it's also up to date. So, you know, current stories from 30 minutes ago, an hour, whatever. And yeah, there's just so many different categories. It's great because some people will download, let's say they want to read the New York Times, so they can download that separate app. But this app, Flipboard, has that as one of its categories. So, you know, I think this is better because you have way more options.
That's fantastic. And so you just need to type in Flipboard in search, and that you'll come up with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, perfect. And what would that be considered? Is that an entertainment app or news app?
No, yeah, that's under the news/magazines app.
Okay, cool. All right, so now on to the next.
Yes, second one. This is under the category of music and audio. I was actually introduced to this one pretty recently, although it has been around, I believe, for a while. It's called Songza. It's spelled S-O-N-G-Z-A.
Okay.
And what that is, it's a music app. And basically what it is it's really cool. There's this thing called a music concierge. And what it does is it kind of suggests what type of music you would like to listen to at the moment. So let's say right now it is it's whatever time, doesn't matter. Let's say it's Saturday night. So let's say it is Saturday night. Here's the suggested music that you can listen to, and usually, you know, music for before going out to a club, or if, you know, preparing some drinks or something. So, and what's great about it, it has all these set playlists together. So you're actually not listening to one song, you're listening to a whole playlist. And it's just a really great app. I mean, you could browse any type of genre, decade, mood. Really, the options are endless for this app.
That's awesome. I'm really glad you sort of explained it, because I also have heard of it, have not had the chance to check it out. So I'm glad that that you've sort of explained it all. Is there lots of different choices there too, John? It sounds like there's a ton.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of different choices. Like I mentioned, any type of genre, from jazz, rap, hip hop, hits, whatever kind of music you like. Also, what's great is, although there are these set playlists, you can also go, you know, if, like, let's say, like I mentioned, it'll actually automatically suggest what type of music you can listen to depending on what time of day it is. But you can go back and just, you know, you can manually change the date and the time, so you can listen to basically whatever you want and whenever you feel like it.
Does it track your habits, John? Like, will it start suggesting things like, let's say you really like listening to whatever, the 90s or something. Does it keep suggesting that stuff to you?
Yeah, it actually does. So you'll be listening to a set playlist, and then if you go back to like the main page, or not the main, but the page that you're listening to that set playlist, at the bottom part, you'll basically see a little section that shows, oh, here are some suggested playlists that you may like to listen to. And that's also a good idea, you know, in case you're getting bored of one set list, then you can go on to the next one that was suggested for you.
Okay, that's perfect. All right, so that is under the music audio category.
Yeah, and I actually just want to give a little special mention, just staying in music and audio. Another quick app is called TuneIn Radio, which is also, I think, a great app. It's basically, you can listen to so many, there's actually over 70,000 stations you can listen to all over the world, just different radio stations, and it's just another great app if people are interested in that.
That's awesome. TuneIn Radio.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right, and what's the next step?
So the third and last one that I want to talk about actually relates to the previous topic that we talked about, and that was the whole resistance training. And so for this one, it's under the health and fitness category, and it's called RunKeeper. So it's a very simple app. It's able to track your running, walking, cycling, whatever type of physical activity you're doing outdoors. It'll track your stats for your pace, your distance, your time, and how many calories you burned. So just a really great app to keep track of how you're doing. And also you can set goals, you know, how much you've logged, how much you've progressed. So it really is able to track how much you've lost. And, yeah, just very, very simple to use also.
That's amazing. So it gives you lots of different options. And like you said, like even tracing your caloric outtake. Or sorry, how much you're burning. Yeah.
Yeah, calories burn. And it's also really cool. It actually has, you can actually, if you have your headphones plugged in, you could also, it also has built-in audio cues. Just, you know, little things, just mentioning how you've been doing. So just really cool. Also, so that's mainly for, I would say, cardio. But if you want to do more resistance training, there's other apps. One is called Fitness Buddy. That's just a separate one. But, yeah, there's many options. But this one, this RunKeeper, is a really great option if you want to keep track of how you're doing in terms of fitness.
Fantastic. That's great. Now, I know there was another topic that we were going to discuss today, and that is the Facebook phone. Now, I've heard about this, but haven't had a chance to really delve into it. So explain, you know, what this is and what is, you know, like, what is a Facebook phone? How does that even work?
Right. So what people first have to understand is it's actually not a phone. It's actually just a regular app or application. So what the name of the app is going to be called, it's going to be called Facebook Home. And I actually watched the preview, the intro for this. There was a big thing online where Mark Zuckerberg, you know, get a demo and he just basically explained what this whole app is going to do. And I watched it, and just a couple of little quick facts that he mentioned, that we spend more than 3 times on the Facebook app itself than any other. We also, there's more than half of the top grossing apps are connected to Facebook, and the average person looks at their home screen 100 times a day, which we'll actually have some significance later on. So moving on to what the actual app is. So you can download the Facebook Home app for free, or you could purchase it pre-installed on a certain, there's only one phone right now, and it'll work together with the Facebook for Android and Facebook Messenger apps, and it'll actually enable you to use its main features, which are, there's 3 main features that I want to talk about. There's cover feed, chat heads, and notifications.
All right, go ahead, John.
So, all right, so first, cover feed. So basically what cover feed is, it's just like your newsfeed when you're on your regular Facebook. But going back to when I mentioned about how people generally open their home screen 100 times a day, this is important because once you immediately open your phone, but you're still on your unlock screen, you'll still be able to see, you know, all the notifications that come on just like from your newsfeed. So basically you'll see pages of, you know, people's pictures, their posts. And if you just want to, let's say, like a picture or post, you can simply double tap the screen and you'll like it. And you can also comment on it. Also for the cover feed, you can also, there's also this little bubble with it, which has your profile pic. And if you hold on it just for a second, it'll display 3 different little icons, little categories. And one is, and so each one has a different function. So one is called App Launcher, one is called Messenger, and one is called Unlock Your Last App. So I think it's pretty self-explanatory. So the next one is called Chat Heads. That's the second big one. And this is basically, it lets you quickly read and reply to messages while you're using other apps. So what happens is someone will send you, let's say, a message. You'll just, in their little, a little bubble will pop up with their face. So you tap that little bubble and you'll be able to chat with them. And then if you don't want to talk to them anymore, you can simply click on that little bubble and bring it to the bottom and remove it.
Wow, that's really interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and the third one, the last one, is notifications. Pretty simple. When a notification pops up, a little bar will appear with their message. Once again, you can just tap on it, and you could also swipe it away if you don't want to talk to them. And if there's multiple messages at a time, the multiple bars may appear. You can just hold on one of the bars, and then they'll all bunch up together, and then you can simply just throw them away at the bottom, and that will get rid of them for now. From what I saw, I was watching some stuff on YouTube, just previews of it. It's a pretty interesting phone. It's a pretty interesting app. And for people who are actually interested in getting this app, basically it launches on April 12th, so that'll be next week. And there's two ways of getting it. You can either download the apps, you'll be able to upgrade to Facebook Home on your own, or by downloading the apps Facebook, Facebook Home, and Facebook Messenger from Google's Play Store. It's actually originally going to be launched only on Android phones, so I'm most certain it'll be introduced to other phones like the iPhone and maybe the BlackBerry, because obviously I would imagine Facebook wants to get as much as an audience as possible. So like I said, it's only going to start off with Android, so it'll be available for the HTC One X, the HTC One X Plus, the Samsung Galaxy S3, and the Galaxy Note 2. And like I said, that's on April 12th, and that's for only people in the U.S. And the second option of getting it is if you can actually buy a phone, which is by HTC. It's called the HTC First, and this will give you, and this comes with the Facebook Home app already automatically installed, so you have nothing to do. You just get the phone and you're good to go.
And is any of this have a cost at all? Like, obviously, if you're buying the phone, but like, so it doesn't charge it. It doesn't cost anything, does it, though, in the grand scheme?
No. To download the app, it's free. I know if you want to buy the phone, the HTC First, which comes already installed with the Home app, It's $99. So not too bad.
Okay. Are you surprised that this isn't coming out on iPhone? Like, I kind of find this odd that it's not starting out on iPhone or Apple.
Yeah. I mean, I am surprised because, yes, iPhone is so popular, although I'm kind of not at the same time, just because Samsung, I think, has gained a lot of popularity recently, and it's just becoming bigger and bigger. I mean, obviously, they made a deal with HTC, and, you know, so I guess it seemed more lucrative at the time, and that's where they're starting. But like I said, Facebook, they have over 1 billion people that are on it. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to leave anyone out.
Right. Okay. That's cool. Well, I really appreciate you you bringing this to our attention, John, because I think it's really interesting to always know what's going on out there and you sort of be up to date, especially with some of those apps that you told us about, because I had no clue that they were out there. So I'm glad you've brought me up to speed and everyone else. So if people want to get in touch with you, John, the best way, I think, is through your Twitter. So how can they reach you?
Yes. Anyone can reach me on my Twitter. It is JON_G87.
Awesome. Perfect. So, John, thank you so much. Can't wait to have you back on the show again soon.
Thanks a lot.
That's John Gordon from our social media team right here on The Kelly Alexander Show.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Relationships are a wonderful part of life, whether it's friendship, family, or a love interest. But relationships can also make life difficult. At what point is it important for you to stop caring about what those around you think is in your best interest? Relationship coach Frank Kermit joins us to talk about ways to make your needs the priority. Frank, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you, Kelly. Always a pleasure to be here.
Do you think it's important to not have regrets when it comes to relationships?
Well, absolutely. And most people tend to regret the things they haven't done more than the things they have done. That's not a license to go out and do everything and anything you want, because sometimes taking the wrong action has a lot of consequences, too. But when it comes to people regretting all the things about their life that, you know, could have been different, woulda, shoulda, they usually focus on the people they didn't give a chance to date or the people they didn't take a chance on even to experiment or explore something, because they worried about what others thought at that time. Now, there are cases where, you know, you need to worry about what other people think, and there are cases where worrying about what other people think is holding you back. So you have to be careful to balance when it is a good idea to do that and when it's not.
Can you explain the difference, Frank? Can you give an example for each?
Okay. When should you not worry about what other people think? When what they think really has no bearing or consequence on your ability to live your life. So if it's your neighbor from three doors down the street who gives you a dirty look, or who disapproves of your lifestyle, your relationship choices, well, then you got to go ahead and live your life anyway, because there's always going to be somebody who has a problem with what you do and who you might do. Now, if it is someone that has a direct access to your ability to live your life, sometimes it could be an employer. Sometimes it could be a member of your family who is in the process of taking care of you and supporting you. At that point, you have to make a choice. Do you go ahead and do it and try to keep it from them, or do you hold off from doing it until such a time as you can be more independent? Or do you say, the heck with it, I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway and just suffer the consequences? It's a lot very easy for everybody to say, who cares what other people think? But the fact is that depending on the context, you really do have to worry about what some other people think if they have the power to interfere with your ability to live your life.
And when is it sort of not of benefit to listen to someone else around you with regards to maybe your love interest? Because I think sometimes, like, quote unquote, when people get in your ear, it's not always the right thing, and it might really wreck something special.
Well, look, you have to distinguish people who have the best of intentions because they're looking out for your benefit. They want to keep you safe. They want to make sure that you don't end up getting hurt. So let's separate the intention of the people who are trying to interfere. There are people who interfere and they have the best of intentions, but it's really not their place. And then there are those people whose intentions are malicious, whether they're jealous, whether they give you bad advice to try and sabotage you because they don't want you to be happy. So that would be the first step. Let's identify the person's intention. Your best friend, as much as you trust that person, may not want you to get along with your new relationship partner because that best friend might feel that your friendship with him or her is threatened. Are they really the best person to advise you? Only you would know. And when is it not a benefit? Again, when they don't actually benefit from you being happy and when they don't benefit from you not being happy.
And Frank, I think it's important as well to figure out when it's best to follow your own interests, because again, I think some people don't trust themselves, especially if they've had maybe or made questionable decisions in the past. But obviously, we all learn from that, hopefully. But sometimes I think it's really easy to listen to other people and not yourself.
Look, it's always easier to listen to somebody else because it relieves us of the responsibility of being accountable. And people, generally speaking, don't like to be accountable. It's one of the reasons that con artists exist. This is what they prey on. They look for people who want somebody else to say, I'll take responsibility for whatever happens. Well, the reality is you're the one who's going to suffer for other people's decisions if it involves you. And no matter how much you say, well, that person is the one who decided for me, they're not the ones who are going to have to deal with the consequences if it was a bad decision. It's really, really challenging for some people to start learning to trust in their own instincts because, again, as you said, some people have made bad choices and hopefully they've learned their lesson. But when you're dealing with somebody who hasn't learned their lesson and they keep going back to make the same mistakes, they may go ahead and ask somebody else to step in for them. Here's the problem. If somebody else is making the decisions for you, it means you haven't really learned not to make that mistake again. So as soon as you remove that other person from the equation, you're right back to where you started. Hopefully you can learn from your past mistakes. Hopefully every time you have a bad relationship experience, you can say, okay, what did I learn from that so I don't make that same mistake again? But worrying about what other people think isn't going to solve that problem. You have to solve that problem by taking accountability for the choices you've made and realizing that your situation right now is a result of the choices you've made.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, relationship coach Frank Kermit. If you want to get into contact with Frank or learn more and get more information, go to his website, franktalks.com. Frank, you know, something that I was thinking about when you were talking is the fact that, again, a lot of people like to pass the buck onto someone else because they don't want to take the responsibility. In all of your work, have you noticed with some of your clients or again, just through your own research and stuff like that, where this crops up? Like, is it from a certain family type that you would sort of pick up these maneuvers, like where maybe your parents were really controlling, so you just let them sort of run your life till you were 25 and you don't know how to handle things?
What I often find is that by the time people are ready to come into coaching, they've reached a point where they say, look, I'm not really sure how I got into this situation. All I know is that I want to get out. So they're ready at that point to at least adopt some new behaviors and experiment with some new belief systems. It's the people who come in and say, well, the rest of the world is crazy. I'm the one who's right. And when I point out to them, because as a coach, I can do something that a lot of therapists cannot do. And as a therapist, you have to help the person lead themselves to the answer. As a coach, I can give you an opinion. I can say, no, I think this is where you're going wrong. When I tell people, well, look, you're the one who's making the mistake here. This is exactly what you're doing wrong. If a person is not ready to hear that, well, they're probably not going to enjoy that session very much. And I do my best to try and, you know, bring it up as gently as I can. But when you're presenting somebody and saying, look, you've made this choice, and this was the wrong choice to have made, that's why you're in this situation now. There are people who simply say, no, this is wrong. I won't accept this. Because once a person realizes that they are at the root, every single issue they have, it forces them to face a reality that they may not be comfortable facing. And I can tell you, it has nothing to do with any particular family type, any particular denomination. It runs across the board. When you're dealing with people who are unwilling to accept their responsibility in the relationship choices they make, it happens at all ages, all genders, all relationship structures. And the fact is, it's a survival mechanism. If you wanted to pinpoint something that you can identify and say, okay, this is where the root is, it's a survival mechanism. Whatever it is that people have that probably works against them now, that habit has formed because at one time, it was probably what they needed in order to survive a past situation. And this is where we go into some work, whether it be therapy or coaching, and say, okay, let's look at how this particular quality that's getting in your way now may have been exactly what you needed to survive a past situation, but that past situation is done. Now we're ready to move on so that you can have an emotionally healthy relationship, and that means you may have to adopt a new set of principles and a new set of beliefs to make that happen.
Frank, what do you tell someone who maybe wants to date someone that they know their family will not approve of and it's going to be a bit of a battle? What do you suggest in that situation?
Okay, well, let's first look at that situation. The question I would have is, what are you dependent on for your family? When it comes to your family, what do you rely on them for that you cannot get elsewhere and that you cannot get independently? Let's use the example of a teenager who has decided they want to come out of the closet and admit to their family and share with their family that they have, they've come to know themselves and they're now gay, all right? At that point, my question is, are you dependent on your family to survive? Is your family putting you through school? Are you old enough or skilled enough to be an independent, can you support yourself independently? Do you have a career going? Now, if the answer is, well, no, my parents are my only support system here, I have nobody else to go to, the next question, when you say that they would disapprove of who you may want to date, in this case, someone of the same gender, how do you think your parents are going to react based on what they may have said in the past, the way they've supported people around them in a similar situation? Now, if I'm told, look, my parents have never, they've been supportive, they probably wouldn't be too thrilled, maybe they have an inkling, maybe they already know. Well, at that point, sharing that with your family, as hard as it may not be detrimental. They'll still be there to support you, they're still going to put you through school, they're still going to help you get your career off the ground, and they're going to help you get a good start in life. If, however, telling your parents might mean you could end up being on the street and you're not old enough to be able to support yourself or you don't have the skills to land a good paying job, well, at that point, no, it's not a time to share it. Wait till you're in a position to be self-sufficient and independent so that way when you tell them, if they go ahead and abandon you for it, you at least can continue living your life and you're not going to end up in a situation that's, it could end up becoming incredibly dangerous for you. So that's how you have to think about it. It's not so much whether somebody's going to like it or not like it or like you or not like you. Over the course of your life, there's always going to be people who one day love you and the next day don't want to hang out with you because you've made certain choices or you've decided to embrace something that you've always been passionate about, or you know, you finally learned to accept yourself. The issue is, when it comes to those people whose approval that you do need, where you do need to worry about what they think, do those people place any sort of block in your ability to survive? And if they do in any way, that's when you need to hold off. If you want to date somebody and your family won't approve, you either try to date in secret with the understanding that you may get found out, and are you prepared for the consequences? If you're not prepared for the consequences, don't date that person yet, or don't date that type of person yet. Wait until you are in a position to be more independent and use this. Let it motivate you. Let it fuel you to get to that level of independence.
How can you balance when your needs take priority versus when you should be taking into account what others around you are saying?
Now, this is actually a very easy question to ask, although it doesn't seem like that. You have to take an account of what your needs are. And if we're talking about losing your ability to get an education, to be supported, those are needs that a lot of people take for granted. When sometimes I'm working with a client and the client says, oh, my parents will definitely be there for me, or my family will be there for me no matter what. And I try to explain to them, well, based on what you've told me, your family is a very controlling and domineering, this is a bad environment for you. This is why you're struggling. Had it ever occurred to you that your family may not be supportive and may very well abandon you for making these choices? And if they do, are you in a position to be independent? And that's when the eyes go wide and they have to start thinking, wait a minute, and the cause for pause is there. So when do you put your needs ahead of, you know, the needs of other people in terms of what they think? Once again, are you in a position to be independent? Once you're in a position to be independent, once you're willing to deal with the consequences, whatever those consequences may be, that's when you can always put your needs at the forefront. But until your basic needs are met, survival, that's when those other needs, such as getting involved with somebody and experimenting with a relationship, that's when those needs can take a back seat. Because if you aren't able to, at the very least, survive, then having the freedom to date whoever you want becomes kind of meaningless when you're struggling to get a minimum wage job just to pay the basic bill so you don't end up on the street.
Are these a good time, or is this a good time, Frank, when situations like this is going on, for you to learn to trust your gut or your inner knowing or whatever you want to call it? Because it seems like this could be a really good learning experience to get to know you.
Anytime you want to get involved with someone, it's a good learning experience. And when you deal with people who may or may not like what it is you're doing, you're going to learn one way or another how important it is. The story that I can relate to is this. When I was first learning about different relationship structures, I was going out there, I was meeting people in all kinds of relationships, whether they be the very conservative and traditional to the fetish lifestyle, BDSM, and I made an error in a judgment call when I happened to share that with somebody that at that point I thought would be open-minded about it. And it turns out that person was not open-minded about it. In fact, that person came to me later on saying, you know, those people that you're getting to know, they're all weird, they're all sick. And she started going on and on about this. Now, here's why it was such a bad mistake on my part. This person that I shared this with was a coworker. And initially, the coworker had presented herself as somebody very open-minded, someone who, oh, you know, I know all about this stuff, this is fine. And when I said, well, you know, I went out to this event and I met these people who do this sort of thing, and it was fantastic. We got into a wonderful conversation. I hadn't even talked about participating in anything. I'm just talking about hanging out with these people and getting to know them, even interviewing them for a podcast or something. Well, one day she came in and she was furious, in a bad mood, and I was on the receiving end of, and you better be careful because these people are evil and they're sick and they're going to twist you, and I didn't even see this coming. Now, that, of course, put a bit of a taint every time I had to work with this person again in the future, knowing that, okay, regardless of how that person presented herself initially, she isn't as open-minded as she pretends to be. And when the dust settles, she's not somebody who I can feel open with and can share with. This is the type of thing you got to understand. Yes, you're going to learn something. Yes, you're going to go out there and explore. And if you are willing to accept the consequences, that's the thing. We can choose our actions, but we don't choose our consequences to those actions. There's no way you can predict how people are actually and realistically going to react to your choices. That's why when you make the decision, I am going to do this, and I don't care what other people think, well, that means that when you're faced with that type of negativity, when you're faced with that type of aggression, you need to be strong enough to say, I know you don't like it, but that's okay. It doesn't affect me. I'm sorry you can't handle it. I will modify my behavior around you, that I won't share these things with you in the future. I won't share anything with you in the future. But I would rather deal with this consequence and have experienced what I've experienced than to just continue worrying about someone who, quite frankly now, years later in my life, isn't even a factor.
Frank, what final thoughts do you want to leave us with on this topic?
The final thought is that it's wonderful and grandiose to say, who cares what anybody else thinks? It's a wonderful, grandiose statement, and you can feel really powerful in the moment. The reality is, you do have to think about what some other people think if those people are really important to you. And the fact is that as much as you want to be happy, and it's important that you find a sense of balance in your life, you have to know that your choices, whatever they may be, will affect those people around you and those people closest to you. So you do need to factor in what they think to a certain point. And when you make a decision and say, well, my need for my people around me to be happy and loving is more important than me exploring this one aspect, you may adhere to that temporarily or fully. It's up to you. Or you may decide, no, my need to live my life and not regret anything and making sure that I explore everything I need to explore, that's more important to me. And if the people around me and closest to me are disappointed in that, they're probably people that I shouldn't have in my life, and I'm willing to lose them. Once again, if that's the choice you want to make, you have to own it. It's not an easy decision. It's not. We can always say, who cares what everybody else think? You know what? We all care about what some people think, especially if we care about the people around us. It's making that call. At what point do we draw the line? Everybody draws the line in a different place. You have to know where you're drawing the line and be comfortable with everything that you might lose for drawing the line where you do. And if you can live with that, if you can wake up in the morning and know, this is where I've drawn the line, and I'm okay with everything that I've got, I'm going to lose, because I look at everything I'm gaining from that, then you're okay.
Frank, thank you so much for your time today. As always, we really appreciate it.
Anytime, Kelly. Looking forward to many more appearances.
That's relationship coach Frank Kermit. Don't forget to check him out on our website, kellyalexandershow.com. And you can also get more tips and contact information for Frank himself on his website, franktalks.com.
Bring on the remix. Remix.
Come on.
That's Rihanna with Stay, the Liam Keegan and Anton Powers radio edit on The Kelly Alexander Show. A big thank you going out to my guests this week, Dr. Frank Farley, John Gordon, and Frank Kermit. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from Oprah Winfrey. Doing the best at this moment puts you in the best place for the next moment. Don't forget to check us out on our social media. We've got a lot going on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Kelly Alexander Show. Also on Twitter, @KAlexanderShow. And as always, on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week. You and I'll chat soon.